WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Running for re-election, Senator Mark Warner takes a campaign spin through the valley in central Virginia. Voters will decide this fall on a referendum allowing local sales taxes to pay for school construction. And we talk with the director of Virginia Clean Cities about this week's EV showcase at JMU. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, July 21st. A Luray man was arrested Monday by the Virginia State Police after a dramatic chase through Page and Rockingham counties that briefly shut down traffic on Interstate 81. The Daily News Record reports that police began chasing Sean Seal, age 34, from Page County through Rockingham County. The chase ended on northbound I-81, just north of Harrisonburg, when state police forced Seal's car off the highway. After a short standoff, Seal was arrested and charged with felony eluding. Seal was wanted on charges of abduction by force, malicious wounding, and other felonies. Senator Mark Warner talked about affordable housing, healthcare, and artificial intelligence with local residents during a tour through the Shenandoah Valley in central Virginia last week. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee and Omega Ilovich teamed up to cover the trip and filed this report.
Senator Warner met with service agency heads and city leaders in Harrisonburg on Friday afternoon and presented a $2 million check to the Harrisonburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority. The congressionally directed spending funds will go towards renovating the 60-unit Lineweaver Annex apartment building, which houses low-income elderly and disabled residents. This is part of a larger initiative, which includes building out affordable housing units in the historic Glenn's Fair Price store nearby. HRHA's executive director, Michael Wong, said the total cost of both projects is around $22 million, which is inflated by tariffs and the Build America, Buy America Act. Warner praised the recently passed 21st Century Road to Housing Act, which combines several pieces of legislation meant to improve access to rental housing and homeownership. The Senate voted on this multiple times between amendments, each time racking up 82 to 90 yays.
You can't get 88 senators where I work to agree the sun rises in the east. So
the law includes the Reside Act, which creates a pilot grant program for local governments to build affordable housing in vacant commercial and industrial buildings. Nonprofit leaders, such as Candy Phillips from First Step, a response to domestic violence, talked about their increasing hurdles.
You know, we used to have a lot of local landlords that we could work with that would really work with us. They bypassed the credit checks, they bypassed some of the other things, knowing that we were working with these survivors. And so many of our apartments locally have gone to property management companies.
After the event, WMRA caught up with the senator on a few other issues, including immigration and customs enforcement, in light of recent operations in Luray and Rutgersville, and fatal shootings at the hands of ICE agents in Maine and Texas.
I would love to put more guardrails on ICE. I'm amazed that, you know, these ICE agents still don't have body cameras. Let me be the first to acknowledge Joe Biden screwed up the border. But that doesn't mean we should put a whole lot of masked ICE agents out there able to pick up people, dropping off kids to daycare, picking up people going to work. And in a place like the Valley where you have relied, whether it's agriculture or poultry, so long on, you know, immigrant labor, this ends up hurting the overall economy. We keep throwing out people that have not committed any other crime other than coming here undocumented. And I think that's wrong.
As WMRA and other news outlets have reported, the vast majority of immigrants detained in the Commonwealth have not been convicted of a crime. Warner noted that following the recent shootings, ICE planned to pause traffic stops, but the White House pushed back.
But you see the president himself reverse that. He's obsessed about kicking people out of this country.
He also said the bill that would create the Shenandoah Mountain National Scenic Area, which Warner and Senator Tim Kaine introduced in 2022 and again last year, is being rolled into broader public lands legislation that probably won't move forward this year. Later Friday afternoon in Stanton, around 100 people braved 90-degree temperatures to attend a meet-and-greet event at Red Beard Brewing Company, as covered by WMRA's Omega Ilovich.
Wow, what a great turnout! Yeah. I can remember Stanton events that could fit in that booth.
The senator will face off against one of three Republican primary candidates in a November general election. Now serving his third congressional term, Warner announced that his upcoming re-election bid would be his last.
It is time to kind of pick up and move on, bring on a lot more young people.
Fresh from a heated CBS News appearance, responding to President Donald Trump's unsupported claims of vulnerabilities in election infrastructure, the former governor focused his fiery campaign speech on national issues, including election security and the war in Iran. One of his major political goals garnered approving roars from the crowd.
It is time for America to have universal health care. Yeah!
Senator Warner was not always a proponent of a universal system. While describing his change of heart on the issue, he cited recent closures of local clinics as part of a larger problem.
We can't have a system where people who tell the truth, for example, at Augusta Health, when they have to shut down rural health clinics because of these future cuts, are kind of held in contempt. We got to start with universal health care because that's the only way we can focus on what we really need to do, bringing down costs.
Closing the speech, the senator turned to another campaign tenet, artificial intelligence. Warner, who was a tech entrepreneur before starting his political career, proposed various legislative responses to the rapid expansion of AI, including a national standard for data center construction.
They don't have to connect to the grid, they can bring their power. We need power of their own. They need water. Yeah. Cannot take your water use. They need to be set back from communities.
When asked about growing calls for a moratorium on data centers, Warner pushed back on the idea. He proposed withholding tax incentives from tech companies as an alternative bargaining chip. With over 660 active facilities and more on the way, Virginia has more data centers than any other state. In March, the Augusta County Board of Supervisors approved funds for a multi-county study to identify potential data center locations. For WMRA News, I'm Omega Ilovich.
And I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Voters in several jurisdictions across Virginia will soon be considering a 1% sales tax to finance school construction. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
State leaders are passing the buck to voters, asking them to approve money for school construction that they could have included in the state budget. Instead, voters will be considering a 1% local sales tax in a handful of jurisdictions, including Richmond, Martinsville, York County, and Fairfax City. Pulaski County Administrator Jonathan Sweet says it's a new tool in the toolbox.
Post-pandemic, it's even more important because of commercial construction escalations, that this is really going to allow some communities to do what needed to be done for a long time and to do it responsibly.
Bill Leidy is a former chief of staff for Governors Mark Warner and Tim Kaine. He says voters who will be considering this need to ask themselves if the local government has a plan for what they want to do with the money and if they have a track record of following that plan. And he suggests Richmond's two-page capital improvement program isn't really much of a plan.
The proof in whether or not you should trust your government slash school board with a big wad of money by levying a local sales tax, the proof of whether that's a reasonable question or not is how they've been spending the money in the past.
The referendum will be on the ballot in some locations in November. I'm Michael Pope.
About a dozen activists and some lawmakers gathered in Richmond Monday to protest the potential merger between Virginia's largest electric utility and another in Florida. And if approved, it would be one of the largest mergers in history. Also with Radio IQ, Brad Kuttner reports.
What do we want?
Ratepayer protection.
When do we want it?
Now.
That's a handful of activists chanting near the Capitol as Virginia's State Corporation Commission considers allowing the merger of Dominion Power Virginia and Florida's NextEra Power. Among speakers at the gathering was a former Florida ratepayer, Sarah Setta, who said she saw NextEra's work do more harm in the Sunshine State than good.
It's not about them caring about the bill payers. It's about them caring that the bill is paid. It's all for their stocks. It's all for their dividends. It's all for anything to do with their company being better than the little low man on the totem pole.
Richmond Democratic Senator Mike Jones also spoke at the event.
We know that NextEra has done some shady things down in Florida. We know that they have had the support of the government in Florida. So the question is, will they have that same access and that same ease right here in Virginia. And I'm here to stand and say, along with you, that hell no, we won't go that easily.
And Culpeper Republican Delegate Michael Webbert, who sits on the Energy Commission of Virginia, wasn't at Monday's protest, but has some reservations too.
Concerned that making sure that we have accountability to the ratepayer.
As for Dominion, shortly after the merger paperwork was filed with the State Corporation Commission last week, they released a statement saying if the merger is approved, the consolidated entity would, quote, meet the unprecedented power demand, support jobs and economic development, and keep customers' bills affordable. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Virginia Clean Cities will host the Mid-Atlantic Advanced Transportation Summit and Expo at James Madison University tomorrow and Thursday. The event will showcase electric and alternative fuel vehicles rolling out in the coming years. WMRA's Calvin Pinn asked Executive Director Alan Harned about the goal of the Expo.
This is a gathering of people working on advanced transportation technologies in the Mid-Atlantic region, so in the multi-state region, coming together to talk about cleaner fuels, cleaner vehicles, and different types of mobility. We don't make a lot of oil in places like Virginia, but we have this opportunity for affordability savings, for efficiency, and for fun. So we've got heavy duty vehicles, medium duty vehicles, and even these, you know, smaller than car size work vehicles here, and a whole slew of different learning opportunities as we transition this technology in the decades ahead.
Could you expand some on the learning opportunities? I know there are going to be some workshops, some speakers, but what can people expect to learn from this event?
Well, the greatest opportunity here is to come together with people in the Mid-Atlantic region to connect with individuals, with the people who are putting this work on, with the people who connecting the people who may want to buy technology for their fleet or for their government, and the people who are manufacturing, distributing, and providing the resource for that technology. There's really a tremendous amount of engagement opportunity. Over 2 days, there is a sequence of workshops on everything you can imagine, on renewable fuels, on policy and freight operations, and there are just this range of technologies in transportation electrification as well.
Which vehicles being shown at this expo would you consider to maybe be standouts?
Absolutely. The things that have me most excited about this conference are the size and scope of transportation technology options. There are going to be some renewable gaseous fuels, biofuels, which is very popular with the farming and agricultural community. But what has me excited is the small and large electric vehicles that are also coming. We have a Mobia E-Quad, which is essentially a large work bicycle, and scaling up from that a four-wheel bicycle style equipment, it scales up to having a production Tesla Semi present. So we're excited about the electric vehicles from Volvo, which manufactures in Virginia, and Tesla, which is has a production vehicle here for the expo. And then in between those sizes, we also have box trucks and work trucks coming in. Excited about the Harbinger electric vehicle and the electric equipment that's in use in Virginia fleets, such as a BrightDrop from ALS.
Interesting. I mean, you know, so much of what I think of when it comes to electric vehicle use is on a more personal level, like, you know, for your daily commute. But it sounds like what we have here are for larger scale operations in the public and private sector. Why is it important for them to adopt electric vehicles?
Because they are the folks who are driving through our neighborhoods with potentially high-emitting diesel vehicles or vehicles for a municipality that might just cost more to fuel than cleaner domestic fuels. And so there's a human health benefit from the transition to these cleaner vehicles, and there's also a community cost savings that's very much possible. And what we'd like to be doing is, you know, communicating that with folks and giving people the opportunity to learn about the available domestic affordable energy for a city or for a county that's able to reduce their fuel cost. That's a way to reduce the the tax costs on their community.
Yeah, between the smoke from the wildfires recently and heat waves this summer, the impact of fossil fuel emissions on the climate, it's been more apparent recently, and that's in addition to the rising fuel costs. So as far as you know, has that been shifting attitudes towards electric vehicles? I mean, what would that take?
Change and making a better world does take work. It takes understanding. And the biggest thing that I've learned after doing this for more than 15 years is it takes experience. Being able to see these things on the ground, touch them and talk to the vendors to understand their costs, talk to the utilities and understand the fuel costs, make that Excel spreadsheet to do your calculation of, hey, does this save us money? That is what it takes. It takes both understanding that these things are real with sitting in the seat and driving the vehicle, but it takes also understanding that these things can be purchased. We're in a transition as a globe. And these technologies are being widely adopted, but we all have an opportunity to lead in this decade, to learn in the next decade, and to potentially make change to make a better world and reduce the impacts of these emissions.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for talking about this conference and for keeping us in the loop.
Thank you so much, and I'm grateful to be in this world with you and appreciate your time on this.
You'll find links to registration and more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Full disclosure, James Madison University's Board of Visitors holds WMRA's operating license. A summer camp inspired by the Netflix series Love on the Spectrum is helping teens and young adults build confidence through social skills. Karis Manzanares with VPM News has the story.
Planning a party, making eye contact, and even figuring out whether someone might like you. Those are just some of the skills Richmond campers are practicing to build confidence and become more independent. Les Redfern, who works with Piers RVA as an instructor, says the summer camp draws from an evidence-based curriculum for neurodivergent youth and adults, which also inspired parts of the hit show.
Dating is no different than any other kind of friendship. It's a type of relationship. And there are do's and don'ts. And when you do not understand social cues, sometimes that can be misinterpreted.
For some campers, like 27-year-old Dorian Sujin, it's already making a difference.
It's helped me to become more confident, independent, and I think that's what a lot of people will take away from this class.
The social skills camp was held in 10 Virginia localities this summer.
Karis Manzanares reporting. Finally today, Virginia crabbers are helping scientists map the bottom of the Chesapeake Bay. WHRO's Catherine Hafner has the details.
Watermen have been working with William & Mary's Virginia Institute of Marine Science to remove abandoned crab traps around the bay. Here's crabber Ralph Bonneville last year demonstrating a sonar unit that scans the seafloor to find the pots.
You go along and you see something on the screen, that little object, if you think that's a crab pot, you hit this for the market.
But this technology has another benefit. It collects data about the depth of the water every few seconds. VIMS professor Kirk Havens says that information is extremely valuable for accurate scientific modeling.
You can then have a better idea what storm surge will do. We have a better idea of different protections and resilience for coastal communities and working waterfronts.
He says it would take tens of millions of dollars to collect that data on their own.
Catherine Hafner reporting. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.